And it is 4:35. Let us kick off our Smart Speaker series with Scott Reed, CTV political analyst, former advisor to Prime Minister Paul Martin, and Brian Passafume, Parliament Bureau reporter at the National Post. Appreciate you both making time on this beautiful Monday. Hi, Scott. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Hey. Brian, you have to clarify, how's your last name pronounced? Because I've been mangling it, I think, for years now.
It's Passafume. It's okay.
All right, it's Reed.
Thanks for that.
Good. It's Rashmi, but you guys don't even have to try, honestly. Just say, hey, you. I'll get it. Pierre Poilievre threatening to filibuster. Is filibustering the cool thing to do these days? Do you think everyone's going to start their summer on June 23rd, or could this go well past the 23rd? Scott?
Who cares? Whatever. Like, this happens at the end of every session. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. This is a particularly strange sort of twist on it, which is we don't like the budget that was brought down like 2 months ago. So we're going to, like, you know, filibuster the budget bill until we get a budget that looks like one we would bring in. Like, it, you know, I literally don't think Canadians could care less. So, you know, if you want to keep members of parliament in Ottawa, in the heat, debating in the House of Commons till hell freezes over, knock yourselves out. I don't think it's going to change what the budget is. I don't think it's going to change any votes. I don't think it's going to change anybody's world. And so I think it's just end of session, blah, blah, blah. And I kind of find it like, a kind of a weak sauce political ploy, to be honest.
Whenever people are being accused of filibustering, I don't know, the average person rolls their eyes, right? Because the interpretation is you're just wasting time, Brian. Does this have value for Pierre Poilievre to announce that he plans to?
Well, as Scott said, it's you're getting to that time of year. The Speaker of the House, Anthony Rota, calls it a silly season. It's kind of everybody's kind of all, it's like, the, you know, when you're in school, when you're all getting excited for Christmas or for summer vacation and things get kind of weird. The thing is that really, if everything was equal, you know, the Conservatives are in a minority government. They have a little bit of power in order to, you know, there has to be some sort of a consensus to pass legislation right now. But that's what that's been upended. You know, the supply and confidence deal with the NDP pretty much leaves very, very little room for the Conservatives to really sort of take a stand here. You know, they're essentially working in sort of a majority like government. So yeah, it's you know, their conditions is they want the carbon tax removed and a bunch of other things, and yeah, they're hoping to stage a filibuster to try to get that changed. Whether it'll work or not, I doubt it, but you know, it's pretty much the only tool left in their quiver right now.
Balance the budget to tackle inflation and cancel the carbon pricing and promise no future carbon pricing either. That's setting the bar pretty high and unrealistic, Scott.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and build a Canadian plant on the moon. We would like all those things done. And if not, we're going to make politicians talk until July. Okay, great. Whatever. I don't care. Just make sure, like, don't interrupt my summer vacation, okay? I don't give a darn about you guys.
Could this back and forth win either of these leaders some support, Brian?
You know, it's. I don't think the whole purpose of this ploy is to garner support or anything like that. It's a statement he's making. I don't think anybody in the OLO legitimately believes that the prime minister is going to throw up his hands and say, "All right, fine, we'll balance the budget, we'll kill the carbon tax." And the prime minister said so much today in his press conference. I was at his press conference today, and he was asked that question. And you know, the prime minister is definitely dead set against pushing his policy through. And I don't think that a threat or even the act of a filibuster will really do anything.
How did you make Justin Trudeau's response to Pierre Poilievre? Some people have been commenting that Poilievre is going to be strong competition for Justin Trudeau. He throws him off. Brian.
I agree with that. I think that, you know, for so long, the prime minister has had very few people willing to really stand up to him as much as Polyev has done. It's the opposition's gone a bit sideshow in a few instances, and they're obviously appealing to their base. Like I said, I don't think anybody legitimately thinks that the prime minister is gonna concede to any of this. But yeah, we're kind of at a weird moment in Canadian politics right now. We're kind of like, it's just a battle of the rhetoric, and really, this is just another it's another front in that battle.
Okay, well, let's go back 30 years to when Paul Bernardo was convicted, and now Correctional Service of Canada has had to issue a statement because on Friday we learned at some point last week Paul Bernardo was moved from a maximum security prison in Ontario to a medium security prison in Quebec. Tim Danson, the lawyer who represented the families of Paul Bernardo's murder victims, Kristen French and Leslie Mahaffey, has been speaking to all media today and throughout the weekend, expressing his concern, obviously, saying that it's disturbing, explaining that he hasn't been able to get an explanation either. And now Correctional Service of Canada has issued a statement saying they've ordered a review of Paul Bernardo's security classification to ensure it was appropriate, evidence-based, and more importantly, adequately considered victims. What would come out of that review? And what do you make of how Canadians have been responding so far, Brian?
You know, this is one of those issues that kind of unites everybody, whether, left, right, conservative, liberal, whatever. This is a stupid move, and it's just definitely, it's definitely part of a larger problem in our sort of correctional justice system about how, victims' rights are often usurped by, the perceived rights of the offended. And this is one of those cases where it's easy to criticize them, but really the real thing that really need to get to the bottom of is how was this decision made and why? I think that's what most people want to know right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the statement says, we understand Canadians want to know reasons for such transfers. And they're saying security classifications, transfers based on risk to public safety, escape risk, an offender's institutional judgment, or other case-specific information. Tim Danson, this lawyer, Scott, pushing for at least some transparency on that institutional adjustment, whatever that incarcerated Canadian is presenting to a parole board, let's say, as an example, could be public information or available upon request. Would you be open to that kind of transparency?
Well, if that's what triggered this, we just don't know. So a couple of things. First of all, I'm from the small town in Eastern Ontario comes out of me when I hear about this case. So I'm with the maddening horrors, right? I am in a world of forget it, lock this guy in a box, wake me up when he dies. Don't care. He's disqualified his right and his privilege to participate in public life. And that's that. So I've got no time for the policy. I am very skeptical that we will actually be told what the reasoning behind this decision is. I am very convinced that this atypical statement from the commissioner is a consequence of public pressure. And by the way, the minister of public security issues a statement saying, don't dig this, which is a really weird thing for the minister to say, very atypical. And so I assume it's an off-ramp for them to reverse the decision, no matter what the reasons were. But if we're looking to learn what the reasons are, I don't think that's going to happen. I'll add one thing more. And I know this is going to just be the angry guy in his driveway. My business partner comes from St. Catharines, his family, lifelong friends with one of the families, with the family of one of the victims, right? Got no time for this, no time for this whatsoever. And it's an insane decision.
Yeah. To even talk about Paul Bernardo's rights, right? To even have Tim Danson say, what about Kristen French's rights? What about Leslie Mahaffey's rights? It's painful. And we've been having that conversation here on The Rush, too, about how traumatic it can be to bring all of that back up. I appreciate you all weighing in on that. We will bring up other topics on the other side, but let's take a break for traffic as we continue our smart speakers on the other side. We have Brian Passifume, Parliament Bureau reporter at the National Post, and Scott Reed, CTV political analyst, former advisor to Prime Minister Paul Martin, joining us on this beautiful Monday afternoon. And there is much more to get into. The wildfire season shaping up to be one that Canada may have never seen or documented before. And we'll play with some sounds on the Smart Speaker Series. All of that and more coming up here on The Rush, News Talk 1010 Toronto. And we are continuing our Smart Speaker Series on this beautiful Monday with Scott Reed, CTV political analyst, foreign advisor to a prime minister, Brian Pasifia, Parliament Bureau reporter at the National Post, joining us as well. And we have been talking about these wildfires. We spoke with a psychologist out east who's talking about, or psychiatrist, excuse me, about the PTSD that lingers after you live through something like the wildfires that are ripping through Alberta and Nova Scotia, Quebec as well, right? These fires could turn out to become a kind of season that we haven't seen before here in Canada. Brian, Scott, do you guys know anyone impacted by these wildfires right now?
Anybody driving home today? I don't know how things are in Ottawa, but there's a here in Ottawa, there's a very orange pall over everything right now. The there's a definitely mist in the air. I've spent years living out west of covering wildfires out there, and it's the first time I've seen, I almost felt like I was back out west. That's how kind of how the things are today, though. The kind of that weird orange pinkish glow to the sun and everything. And yeah, it's crazy.
And now the Globe and Mail is already documenting that the wildfires are straining our resources this early into the season. Sorry, Scott, I cut you off there.
No, I was just going to say I'm in the same place. I have like very, very close friends who are worried about the fires and whether or not it's going to take their home. And you know, when I was, this is not like a wildfire situation, but like 30 years ago, my parents' home burned down, and it was like the biggest event in our family's history, like, you know, for decades. Like, it was a big deal. It was a defining moment. So PTSD and the effects that it can have, the lingering effect, like, for sure. My mother talks about it nonstop still, the effect of having her home burned down.
Mm-hmm. It's something you can't recover from. And then you think about the people fighting these wildfires right now. Many of them are volunteer firefighters, right? They do other things year round. And then when wildfire season comes in, they kick into gear. Brian, do you think it's going to be an unprecedented year of wildfires?
Well, I was at the press conference today with the prime minister, and some of the modeling that they had released to the media before the press conference was, it was frightening. You know, Canada has a certain number of hotspots that see, you know, most of the wildfires throughout the year, a lot out west, up north, and sort of northern Ontario, northern Quebec, and Northwest Territories and stuff. But the looking at the areas that the modeling is putting at high risk for wildfires, like, it includes like southern Ontario from like Windsor up to the Golden Horseshoe through Toronto, large swaths of northern and sort of middle Ontario, pretty much all of western Canada. So yeah, like, you, when you think of wildfires, you think of places like BC or Alberta in the mountains. Like, you know, like we're definitely facing a risk this summer of having wildfires in and around Toronto. You know, that's something that we haven't seen. And I think this is they were saying it's going to be unprecedented this year, and I think they're right. You know, it's been like 3.3 million hectares of land burned so far this season, and the wildfire season is only a month old. So that right there tells you everything that everybody's definitely on guard for what could be a horrible season.
Mm-hmm. We have hundreds active right now, 772, I believe, are active right now. Scott, if the modeling comes out, how do we get the message to Canadians, or is there a message here for this season for the average Canadian?
I don't know. I'm not that profound, but I know this, and Brian sort of hinted at it. You know, each year is going to be unprecedented from here on in. That's, I think, the fundamental takeaway. And unpleasantly, what Brian is, when he talks about southern Ontario, he talks about encroaching into the Golden Horseshoe, he talks about, you know, Toronto. Like, the reality is that so much of our country hugs the 401. You know, it hugs that corridor. And that's in terms of pure population, right? And once, you know, like for decades, you know, there are wildfires in, you know, BC, there are wildfires in rural Alberta and northern Ontario. I have family that have been affected by them and are affected by them. And, you know, once it starts to hit Southern Ontario, once it starts to crouch into that community, encroach onto that community, that hugs the 401, then it's like, oh gosh, hey guys, it got real. Well, it was real for lots of other people before now, but that's what's making it real. And yeah, I think it's going to register with people. Now, does that mean that, you know, folks are going to say, and as a consequence, I'm getting rid of my, carbon fueled car? No, but it is the kind of thing that makes people say, jeepers, creepers, this is a changing event. This is different than it was when I was a kid. It was different than it was during my parents' time.
Brian, you said it was pretty terrifying, the modeling. Are we getting the message across? Do you anticipate that newsrooms will be delivering the message? Or what is the message for Canadians from the Prime Minister's news conference today?
Well, as Scott said, you know, this is something that people in Southern Ontario, like, never, like, other than seeing it on the news, like, wildfires never enter their reality. Like, I grew up in Brampton. I grew up, the Toronto area. I've never seen wildfire smoke before. But the past couple of years, it's 1 or 2 days around Toronto every summer. You can get a smoky day. But yeah, I think things are just going to get worse. And I think that, the reality of wildfires for someone living in Mississauga or Brampton is nothing compared to someone living in Fox Creek or Fort McMurray or one of these other places that see fires routinely, whose every wildfire season, there's a very good chance that there might be a fire close by. And that's a reality I think that Southern Ontario is going to start seeing more and more of.
Oh, truly. It's a reality that is, we just have to really face it. Brian, your friends at the National Post have published some research that shows 1 in 5 people suffer high stress reactions to everyday sounds. This is a disorder that is called misophonia. And we've been trying to identify whether any of us are misophoniasts. Is that a word? I don't know. But are there any audio sounds that offend you, Brian?
I absolutely hate the sound of teeth on popsicle sticks. my little girl, she's very bad at that when she's chomping down on a popsicle. That puts me into full fight or flight mode.
Specific. Scott, you have any sounds you don't like?
Yeah, people breaking into tears, because that always upsets me. You know, like, people are like, why aren't you more upset about how upset I am? And of course, anything by Rush absolutely tips me right off.
Audacity. Oh, no.
I know. I'm a bad Canadian. I'm turning in my passport.
They're launching a brewery at the airport. Rush, a news statement just went out today celebrating this Canadian legendary band, but not for Scott Reed. All right. Well, send us out with
closer to my heart.
Slurping or some clicking or some, how about some typing? I don't even know, guys. Mike Catherwood found that sound somewhere in the board. It just lives in this building here. We'll send you off with some slurping sounds, gentlemen. Snoring. Brian Passifume, Parliament Bureau reporter at the National Post. Scott Reed, CTV political analyst, former advisor to a prime minister. Thank you both for making time on this beautiful Monday. That is our Smart Speaker series. Coming up on the other side, we will hear from the executive director of Pride Toronto. Sherwin Modeste joins us live on The Rush, responding to $1.5 million more available for security. How much could Toronto get?